Hi everyone, welcome to our very last episode of Rich Reflects with our work bestie, Crystal.
Hi!
I can't believe, babe, it's been 6 months.
Oh my God,
and six months of value that you've really brought to us.
Oh, thank you.
I mean, I've also, you know, spoken to, you know, a lot of the people in the community, and a lot of them really enjoyed the episodes with you because it's so actionable, it's so tangible, and you break it down so well for all of us, you know, to be able to walk away with something that we can immediately work on.
Thank you.
So thank you so much, and we look forward also to your own podcast.
Yay!
Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I just launched my podcast, Comfort and Growth,
yeah,
with Crystal, your work-life bestie. So it's all about personal growth and productivity. Every day we wake up, we go through our, you know, morning rituals, we try to set out our day for success.
I love that. Really looking forward to that. Check it out. So we're going to get started to answer some of the questions that the community has for you.
Yay.
Okay, so let's go. The first one is, Crystal, you know, when it comes to being in a startup versus corporate environment, how do I assess which type of working environment suits me the most? How much of prototyping is enough for me to make a decision?
Oh my goodness. Startup versus conventional big corporate environment. Also versus SME. There are three different sort of distinct work environments. Okay. So generally, I feel that the startup environment is suitable for someone with quite a flexible, self-starting kind of personality. It's like you really got to have this comfort with change.
Yeah, and it's almost like a founder's mentality also.
Yeah, absolutely. So like with a startup, you're going to get maybe a scope of work and a job description, but that is going to evolve every week, if not every day. So like if you're the type of person that is like, you know, I was hired for this JD, then you ask me to do something that's not within my scope of work, then how can it be? Then what kind of training? Then you're probably not suited for a startup life, because startup life is all about problem solving.
Yeah.
It's all about doing whatever needs to be done. It's about having a very entrepreneurial mindset and taking ownership for these problems. So even though you are not a business owner in a startup, you have to kind of be thinking like a business owner, because everyone has to make their seats count on a startup, right? There's only limited seats on this rocket that is like taking off, right? And this is not the time to argue like who is sitting on which seat in the rocket, right? The rocket needs to take off.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think one thing I realized about startup phase is also that we generally have to cover much more than what we're expected to in terms of scope as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's startup.
We got to talk about SMEs as well, small, medium enterprises, because actually, I think the statistics are like the vast majority of businesses that hire people are actually small, medium-sized enterprises. Yeah. So when you work for an SME, sometimes there are less clearly defined learning and development opportunities in a very structured way. For example, they may not have like a leadership training program or like management associate program, but the upside of that is that you will learn a lot. Similar to startups, they are small companies that require people to pull their weight. They probably have a more established business than startups, but you will be probably learning a lot, seeing various areas of the business, whether it's invoicing, whether it's sales, whether it's marketing, whether it's, you know, strategy. SMEs tend to have a little bit more of a inverted commas family style culture, which has pros but also cons. For instance, sometimes I do get a lot of people saying to me that I don't know if there's formal systems or processes or policies,
structures.
Like I don't know, like, you know, what kind of training I can go for, or if I make a complaint, who do I go to in HR, because we may not even have HR to take care of us, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So again, I think SMEs, you need to be reasonably good at problem solving, at being vocal, and also not being afraid to say to management, because oftentimes they want to support you. They want you to stay, they want you to grow, but it's just that in SME culture, they're very busy.
Yeah.
So like you might say, well, I want to go for this training program. I want to go for this, you know, I don't know, AI prompt engineering, or I want to go for this leadership course. Can you actually give me some budget to go? And the advantage of being an SME as well is that you can sometimes grow in terms of your title really fast. In a corporate environment, it's like, okay, 2.5 years, then promote to this rank, then another 3 years, then this rank. But in SME, it's like if you're good, like the
you can rise up.
Exactly.
So that's SME. And I know that for startups and SME, the pace is vastly different from an MNC, right?
Yeah. Well, not necessarily. Some MNCs also have very fast-paced lifestyles, like, for example, in tech, for example. But in a professional MNC corporate environment, there are a lot of systems, structures, workflow, policy, clearly defined sort of like performance review, coaching, mentorship programs, all kinds of resources, even mental health resources,
support
that you can tap on. So in general, like when you go into a corporate, there is a big sort of system
that really exists and is defined.
Yes, absolutely.
Or it can also be seen as red tapes, right? Because one thing that I hear a lot from people who come from corporate background, MNC background, is also that there are a lot of layers to getting approvals or red tapes, as they call it. And sometimes that also slows down the process of getting things done.
Yes. When you come into a corporate environment on the first week of work, like practically the whole week is just onboarding.
Yeah.
And it's just such a luxury. Sometimes, you know, you're sitting there and you're doing, fire drill, what do I do?
Yeah.
PDPA, all of this. And you're just going through all of this onboarding. And there's a lot of systems. There's a lot of resources to help you. However, these systems being so well established sometimes can really get in the way.
Yes. So in summary, how would you say, you know, for like startup SME and corporate, what would I be looking for if I want to join each of them?
I don't know if there's an ideal answer because like it will obviously depend on your personality. For me, what I chose to do was to start at a very big company. So I worked at a major investment bank, a global investment bank that allowed me to understand how the corporate world worked, what various divisions stood for, what is legal, what is compliance, what is sales, what is, you know, this capital market. And like understanding like how to speak at a professionally in a corporate way, how to navigate senior stakeholder politics. And there was a lot of mentorship and a lot of skills transfer. So I learned a lot from my corporate experience, how to navigate corporate clients. And then when I came out into the world of being an entrepreneur, I knew what the other side was like.
Amazing.
Yeah, so then I knew how to...
So you could infuse the best
yes.
of the experience there.
Yes, wow. I knew how to talk to my clients, how to behave professionally, how to network, how to, you know, present myself in a meeting. I had learned from the best and I'd seen how it was done professionally. So it was very easy for me to navigate, and I knew the sort of discipline and the sort of structure that I needed to have as an entrepreneur.
Wow. So it's like extracting and taking the lessons from the good and the bad as well, right?
But also, I coach a lot of founders, like yourself, you know, who have started homegrown businesses and then been massively, massively successful. And they have never, ever worked in a corporate company, but they're still very successful. And I think how they actually are so successful is once they get to a certain scale, they recognize their limitations and they go and hire people who know how to do all this corporate
stuff.
Either
professional management team or people with corporate experience as
Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome. And leading to that, you know, there's another question. I think this is more like the startup SME culture, but when the work environment is ever-changing and ambiguous, how do I provide clarity and assurance to the team without continuously sacrificing my own well-being and headspace?
So in developmental psychology, there is this concept called holding. And it means that in times of great volatility and uncertainty, what people need is holding. Just like when, let's say you have a child, like you and Ollie, you're out there, let's say in a wet market, and then suddenly a man faints and is on the ground and maybe he hit his head and maybe there's blood somewhere. Mm-hmm. And of course, Ollie might be a bit shocked by what's going on, right? But then what do you do as an adult? What would you do, Rach?
I mean, I would take him away.
Yes.
Yeah, and I would try to comfort him and explain what happened.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So that's exactly what a leader needs to do in a situation of uncertainty. They need to act decisively. Mm. Like you took Ollie away, so okay, let's act in a way that you know, mitigates whatever that is going on. Secondly, you need to explain and acknowledge what's going on. Instead of saying like, "Oh, Ollie, nothing happened," right? Then that will leave him with a sense like, "Oh, but I know something happened," and then I'll feel very uneasy. A great leader actually acknowledges the truth of what has happened, but in a way that is very digestible and helps people make sense of what's going on.
Wow.
So be able to say, something's happening and I want to acknowledge that. And I want to tell you, this is what I do know and this is what I don't know.
Mm.
But in a way that's very reassuring and also as transparent and with as much integrity as you can have in this situation.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing. And that's really very helpful as well. I think sometimes I also relate like being a leader to being a parent, like you said, right? It's really also about taking care of the lives under our care. There is this other question on, you know, Crystal, as a chronic people pleaser, how do I better manage expectations on what I'm able to realistically deliver without feeling like I'm disappointing my manager and team?
Yeah, so as a recovering people pleaser myself, <Same here. laughs> you know, I really want to add value all the time. And then when my manager or my boss would come to me and he'd be like, oh, can you do this? Even though I'm very busy already, I will try to think of all kinds of things that I can add even more value, even when, you know, somewhere in my heart of hearts, I know, oh no, this is going to cause a lot of stress for me. So, you know, in our previous episode that we did together on Head, Heart, Gut, it's also important to tune in before you actually say yes to anything, to tune in not just to your head thinking, but also to your heart. Like, is this right for me? Do I really want this? Does this correspond to my values and to my gut? Like, what is my instinctual kind of wisdom say about this? So I think the first thing is actually creating some space in between the request and the response. So my therapist once said to me, you know what, you're going to do this homework because you're a people pleaser. For the next 2 weeks, whenever anybody wants you to do anything and they ask you for something like, Rach, can we go for coffee? Rach, can you send me over the whatever? You're just going to say, I'm going to get back to you in a moment. Yeah, so it's about creating that pause where you don't immediately have that knee-jerk muscle that just, yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, because that's what we have. That's what we've been conditioned as people pleasers.
Yeah, so it's like pattern interrupting. Mm-hmm. And then what we are training is the pause muscle. Instead of the knee-jerk muscle, we're going to be training like, you know, you ask me something, Rachel, now I'm going to be like, let me just take a moment and consider that. I'll get back to you if that's okay. And once you train that pause muscle, there is so much power in the pause. There is a space, as Viktor Frankl said.
Yes.
And in that space is all our power and all of our freedom. So that means stimulus happens. My boss asks me something and I want to say yes, but instead of reaction, I'm going to actually pause and I'm going to open up a space in which I can actually check in. Is this right for me? Is this what I want? Yeah. And when we get more accustomed to practicing that pause and reflection muscle, it actually sets us up in life for in so many different ways, with our spouses, with our kids, with, you know, our friends, to just be a more considerate person and also live in a more powerful, empowered way.
Yeah, and I love also that you brought up the somatic experience, right? And also paying attention to which part of our body feels what, because that's usually also, like you said, a sign, you know, as to whether we should say yes or no and go for it. The next question is, how do I overcome fear, you know, when I'm being called out in a big meeting and still show that, you know, I'm calm in my response, even though I may not know the answer?
Right. Okay, first and foremost, I want to say two things. The first one is that it's okay to say, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's actually a mark of maturity, experience, and confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Number one rule, don't BS. Don't just kind of like make
stuff.
It will
show.
It will show. I was just doing an offsite for an aviation company and they had a Shark Tank style sort of a competition where, you know, we were supposed to be judges and there were all these teams that were going to pitch. And like, that was one theme that came up over and over again. The most senior leaders of the aviation company kept on saying, do not BS. If you don't know, just say, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I have a plan for how I'm going to find out.
Amazing.
Yeah, it shows your integrity. And the most confident leaders, when you look at them, they actually say, well, I don't have enough information to make that decision right now.
Yes.
But here's my plan for finding out. And great leaders ask a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
So you could say when, you know, you're put on the spot, you could say, well, great question. And I have some clarifying questions on my side as well. If they ask you a question, let's say they ask you about, Crystal, which kind of software do you think we should go with, right? then I might actually say, well, that's a great question. But for me to answer that, first, I want to understand, right, like, what metrics, yes, of success are we looking for? What do we want this software to accomplish for us that's different from what our current software is doing? So in that way, I've not answered, yes, the question, yeah, but I'm just trying to get more information.
Yeah, and context, yes, to the situation. I, yes, love that, because I realize also that, you know, in candidate interviews, mm-hmm, sometimes, you know, the candidate obviously wouldn't have all the answers, but, mm-hmm, sometimes they BS their way through, and, yes, it's really obvious.
Yes.
But the times where I'm really impressed is when they come outrightly to say, exactly like what you say, I don't know the answer, but here are the resources that I know that I can use to find, mm-hmm, the answers. And after the interview, they will get back over email to, yes, share their thoughts and their answers. And also, like you said, follow up with clarifying questions. Mm. So I think there is so much power in also admitting that we, mm-hmm, don't know, but we're going to find out.
Yeah, and asking good questions is, yeah, a life skill, yeah, right? We all need to get much better at listening, mm, and we need to get much better at asking questions. In fact, like, the biggest contributor to my success in my business is when I learn not to talk so much in client meetings and actually to ask good questions, because I already know what's in here. I, yes, already know what I want to say, but the, yes, the meeting is an opportunity,
yeah,
for me to find out more information from my, yeah, client, from my stakeholders, what they want. And, yes, the more every time I'm opening my mouth,
yeah,
I'm actually depriving myself from the opportunity to learn.
Exactly. And I think there was an episode on Rich Reflects, which we talked about the art of asking powerful questions. Mm. So please check that out. And as a segue to that, you know, there was this question that asked, how do I think on the spot when I'm asked for my opinion during meetings?
If you were to ask me in a meeting, Rach, for my opinion, the first thing I would do is to take a little bit of an assessment as to how qualified I am, mm, or like, what is the state of my knowledge? So the first thing I might say, well, Rach, I'm not an expert in that particular domain, but, you know, here's what I know.
Mm.
So there's a little bit of a context. Like, am I saying that I have a lot of knowledge and therefore you should take my opinion very strongly, or I don't have that much knowledge, so, yeah, hold this lightly sort of thing. So I would have a little bit of a qualifier at the start. I would attempt to break the question down to certain fundamentals.
So, you know, for example, let's say we're in performance review period now. There's a debate within the management team whether this person deserves a promotion or not. So half of us think that,
yes,
she should, half, yes, of the other half think that they shouldn't. So Crystal, what do you think?
Okay, so the first thing I'm doing is going to qualify what my experience or expertise is. So I might say, Rach, well, personally, I haven't worked with Francesca that much this year, but I have done 2 projects where she's been involved. So that's the qualifying bit. And from my experience working with her, this is how I would look at it. Now we come into phase 2, and I'm literally making this up. I'm just trying to deconstruct how I think.
Yeah.
Phase 2 would be, I'm going to give you a structure or a mental model.
Mm.
So phase 2 would be, Rach, when I look at who should get promoted or not, I tend to look at 2 pieces. One piece of it is the what Francesca has delivered, the results. The other piece of it is the how has she done it. Has she been collaborative? Has she been, you know, positive? Has she been, like, you know, great for our culture? So this is the second piece, is I'm going to give some sort of structure as to how I'm approaching this question. And then the third phase for me would be, now I will go into assessment. So when we come to the first part of it, the performance part, she's delivered great results in ABC. But if I look at the second half of it, Rach, how she's delivered those results, I don't think she's been as collaborative as she could have been.
Mm.
And then the fourth phase is, I'm going to give some specific data to back up those broad observations.
Yeah.
So I guess, like, that's my informal model.
Yeah, wow, that's great. Because I think sometimes, I love that you also have a qualifier in the very beginning.
Yes.
Right? Because this is really about your opinion,
mm-hmm,
rather than, let's say, answer, like, mm-hmm, what we spoke about the question earlier. So
yeah. Because a lot of people would just be like, no la, I don't think you should promote her.
Exactly.
Like, oh yes, I'm like, based on what?
Yes.
Like, I'm a very structured thinker.
So that fourth phase is really very helpful, yes, for us. Awesome. So Crystal, the next question is, you know, I'm good friends with all my team members.
Okay, Salah already.
Wrong. wrong already. Oh, dear.
Okay, oh, no. Sorry, continue.
I'm good friends with all my team members. However, and therefore there's a problem, right? So how do I draw boundaries to not let them abuse this closeness by underperforming while still stay as good friends?
I cannot take this. Okay, so when you start up as I'm good friends with my team members and employees, it's already like, you know, it's a very tricky situation because in a work context, we are not friends. We are not family. Primarily, we are a high performing team. So when you start off with like, we're good friends. No, we're not good friends. Like, you know, when you go to work, you don't need to be best friends. You don't even need to be good friends. You need to be a high performing team. Mm. Yeah. So you need to have that mentality where the focus is on what value can we create? How can we optimize how we work together? And primarily, we are a collaborative, high-performing team that has trust in each other, but doesn't necessarily have to be each other's best friends or good friends. In certain industries like media, like startup, you know, because they spend so much time with each other.
It's very personal and the lines are blurred.
It's very informal and then there's no boundaries and then the lines are blurred. And it can give people whiplash when one minute their boss is like, oh, you know, advising them on their relationships, they're sharing something like a confidant and everything, and they're you know, joking, and the boss is like, oh yeah, come over to my place on the weekend for barbecue with my kids. Then the next minute, the boss is saying that this is totally unacceptable.
Right.
I'm going to have to see some marked improvement on your metrics. It's like a complete different tonal shift.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like good leaders need to be able to have that range in which you can be comfortable giving somebody hard feedback and also comfortable being a coach and a supporter. So I would say that generally at work, I try to use this language like we're a high performing team, you know, one team, one dream sort of thing, rather than like, oh, we are family, we are friends and that sort of language.
Yeah. And I've had to also learn that the hard way. You know, when I first started, I wanted to be friends with everyone. I wanted to be liked by everyone.
Yes.
But, you know, through the years, I've also learned it's harder for me to draw the line sometimes and have boundaries where there is underperformance or there is something I need to speak to my team member about, you know, I find I struggle a lot more with having that hard conversation.
I also think there's another part to this, which is fairness and the perception of fairness.
100%.
So, so like for me, okay, tell you a specific story.
Yes.
I was managing a team and like 50 people on this team. So my office is very big, open floor plan. It's like 50 people in this floor plan. And then from the main door to the office, to my office, I have to walk along this particular corridor. And then there's people left and right of my path, right? So when I was, walking down this corridor, I would always say hi to the people on the left and the right side of me. But of course, the people at the far end of the room, I don't get to see them that much unless I go to the toilet or something, right? And then to my horror, I found out that on the office unofficial gossip WhatsApp group, the part of the room that was very close to me, they were nicknamed Sentosa Cove. Because they were supposedly like the atas, you know, high class people that like, oh, you were always in my favor. But it was just purely because of my walking path.
Distance,
and that is when I realized that people are very, very sensitive to that perception of fairness and favoritism. So even though in my mind, I was just doing what was normal and making a little bit of conversation. Hey, Rach, how are you? Oh, look, baby is whatever this and that. But the fact that I didn't do it to those other people, it made a huge, it was a negative morale factor for them. And then I realized that part of being fair is also trying to consciously eliminate these sort of like perceptions of unfairness. So not buying a birthday cake, for example, even though I want to buy a birthday cake, because if I buy a birthday cake for you, it means I need to buy a birthday cake for all 50 people. And am I really going to do that? Probably not, right?
I love that. And that's why there is also a shift, like for us, you know, in Love Bonito, from calling each other family to team, right? Because I think about it like in a sports team, we're all accountable for the role or the position that we play. And if there is underperformance for a prolonged period, you know, you have to sit on the bench or do PIP and things like that. And it's just normal. So I think that is something that, you know, like in family, they say that you tolerate.
With family, it's like you can't fire them.
You can't fire them.
You can't
them.
Get rid of them. So it's like for life, right? Yes. So whereas at work, this is a contract in which you deliver and you get paid and you deliver and you get promoted. You don't deliver, you don't get promoted. So it's very much more performance-based. It's not no to good friends, but it's first and foremost, you're a high-performing team. And then secondary, before everything else, and then secondary to that, we can have a friendship. Mm. But the focal framing of that relationship is that we are great partners. We are great collaborators. And we've also become friends. But it's not like we are good friends.
Right.
And also sometimes we work together.
Yes, yes, that's very, very helpful. Yeah. The last question is, you know, Crystal, how do I know when it's time to quit? So many people talk about the power of grit and resilience, right? But it's also important to know when to throw in the towel. Mm-hmm. I always say that, you know, one of the worst advice is don't give up. Because I really do believe that there are certain times in our lives where we need to give up.
Yes.
So how would you advise us?
So I think the answer has a lot to do with self-awareness. So the first part, internal self-awareness, is how well do I know my values, my strengths, my weaknesses, my blind spots. So for example, if I am figuring out whether to carry on my side hustle, which is not making money, or throw in the towel, is this actually my strength? Is this actually aligning with my values? Yeah. Is this something that I really feel internally that I'm confident about it? The other half of that decision is external self-awareness. And that is kind of understanding how you come across to the world. And this is getting feedback from other people.
Like so, blind spots that we have.
Exactly. So I might say, oh, I've been trying this, whatever, cupcakes business for some time. It hasn't been delivering any results. And I'm very convinced about this. But maybe I'll just go and ask a few people who are either experts on the business, who know me really well, can give me a different third party view and sanity check whether it my internal self-awareness is really on course. So I think it's kind of both, like getting clear on like, is this serving you? Is it stressing you out too much? Is it something that you really deeply care about? Is it something that you are very equipped to do? And then the other half is kind of verifying that with like neutral third parties.
I love that. And I think also, you know, to add on to that structure, it's also about like what you taught us in the last episode with you on our head, heart and gut, and to be able to use these three intelligences to weigh it out and to make that choice as to whether we should stay or we should leave.
Yeah, I think though, a very general rule of thumb is that if every day you wake up and you shower, you think about this question, oh, should I stay, should I go? And then you brush your teeth, you think about a question, then you go to work, think about a question, it's probably a good indicator that it's not your zone of genius. It's not working out, and maybe that's causing a lot of tension, a lot of blockage because you maybe don't just want to accept the truth of the reality that you're efforting a lot and somehow it's not working.
And I think what helps me is also talking to a trusted friend, a coach or a mentor, to also talk through, you know, exactly how I'm feeling and why I'm feeling this way. Because sometimes when we do that, we articulate, you know, our inner deepest thoughts that we either don't want to come to terms with, or, you know, was just unearthed within us.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. Having somebody who can help you separate out which part is the ego drive. I'm doing this. I refuse to give up because it's my ego. I don't ever give
it's
up.
Pride
it's my pride. I don't want to give in. Or is it coming from a place of genuine love and genuine passion or genuine conviction rather than just from an ego place?
I love that. Thank you so much, Crystal, for sharing with all of us. Is there any last maybe word of advice or word of wisdom that you want to share with our community as we end season one? And hopefully we get to see you again in season two.
Wow, you see? she asked me on camera.
So Crystal, yes.
Okay, parting words. When it comes to your career, take your work damn seriously. But don't take yourself too seriously. I meet too many people in the world who do it the opposite. They take themselves very seriously, their ego very big. Oh, you hurt my feelings and whatever. But then they don't take their work seriously. So like the kind of people I like to work with are people like you, Rachel. It's like, wow, we can have a laugh. We can take the piss out of each other.
Yeah.
We can be like, oh my God. We can say like hard truths to each other. We don't take ourselves and our ego so seriously.
Yeah.
But when it comes to work, Rach, if you tell me I need this thing by this deadline, I'm going to get this done, I know for sure, 100% trust in you that you are professional and you take your work seriously.
Aw, thank you. And in the meantime, while we go for a break after season one for Rach Reflex, remind us, where can we find you online?
Well, when Rachel's podcast season finished, then feel free to come over to my podcast, Comfort and Growth with Crystal Lim Langer. And I'm also on Instagram, on TikTok and LinkedIn, all under the same handle, Crystal, LimLange, one word, no spaces.
Thank you so much, Crystal. It's been an amazing season one with you.
So much fun.
We have gained so much just from, you know, the last 6 months with monthly episodes with you, and we definitely look forward to more. And if you have any takeaways that you have had from this episode or any word of gratitude and appreciation that you want to give to Crystal, please feel free to share it with us, and we'll be so happy to also hear from you and any feedback that you have for us. So here's saying goodbye to our final episode with our work bestie for now. Goodbye for now. Thank you so much again, Crystal, for being so generous with your wisdom
it's
and
a
advice.
Pleasure. See you guys.
Bye.